Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Slipping and injured is Zion Williamson. Back the other way, a layup for Cam Johnson. And 36 seconds into the game, Zion Williamson is down.
He blew through his shoe.
Yeah.
Look at his look at his left shoe. He blew completely through the shoe.
So we were debating if and when Zion Williamson comes out, does he take the bait? I'm sure all the other shoe companies are calling him and calling family members right now and saying, yeah, you can't go with Nike. You can't go with Nike. Or does he go with Nike and really lean in and come out with like the Blowout Z is the name of the shoe? You see him at the factory. You see him like wearing a hard hat or wearing like a lab coat and pointing at exactly the specifications he wants. Who knows? We could play those games all day. Eamon Brennan of The Athletic is on Twitter, at Eamon Brennan. He joins us now on Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was unexpected last night, but it has us talking about all sorts of big-picture things, Eamon.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the oddest, strangest things I've ever seen on a basketball court, and I'm not, you know, I'm not the most wizened old head. I'm sure there's plenty of, like, for example, Coach K said he's seen shoes break plenty of times. He would be considered a wizened old head, but it was odd. And when it came in the game, in addition to all the sort of lasting ramifications moving forward here, but sort of when it came in the game, totally changed the tenor of the night, obviously changed the way that Duke performed. And I think will sort of be remembered as a really weird outlier in a rivalry that kind of kicks stuff up like that from time to time.
Yeah, Eamon, I mean, there was really no chance for Duke to get themselves back together after Zion went down. You could tell how it affected those players, but Reddish and Barrett had good nights. Do you figure Kay has enough of everything to get Duke back on track and wait for Zion to return?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the ability to do that, you know, in-game for any team would be really hard, and Reddish said it after the game last night, like, you know, not only is Zion Williamson really good at basketball, but he's their energy. Like, he is the guy who is constantly bouncing around, constantly making big plays, who they know they can get a bucket from every time down the floor. You know, when they were shooting, what, 2 for 20 in the first half from three last night, they wouldn't have needed to nearly as frequently because Zion just can score against anybody at any time and makes everything really, really easy for everybody else. So you take that away and you take sort of his energy and the excitement of the crowd away and the hush over the crowd and what is normally a raucous environment, obviously. It changes things. But, you know, with a couple of days, Duke is not a team short on talent. And what's remarkable about their talent level is that, you know, RJ Barrett is the guy coming in this year who was the most accomplished prep, who was the number one player in the class by most accounts coming out, and who a lot of people picked to be the player of the year before Zion really exploded into what he's been. So, you know, he has maybe even another level he can get to in an already really good freshman season. And they have guys like Javon Delorier, Marcus Bolden, who can take bigger roles. Trey Jones being back from injury now for a couple weeks has been huge, and that will continue to be the case. There's plenty of talent there, and they can figure it out. But there will be a massive, both literally and sort of productive-wise, gap in what they are moving forward compared to what they have been and what they could have been.
And yet the bigger picture we're talking about is here is this guy playing for free. This guy's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and he's running around there in shoes for which Mike Krzyzewski is getting all the big checks, and he doesn't get any of the money. And it was another opportunity to point at the injustice of the free labor cartel that the NCAA is right now. And people say, like, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? Well, that something like that, without having it be some sort of catastrophic injury, that's really all it should take to have some of these players saying, wait, what are we doing here?
Yeah, totally fair. And I think that that's a discussion that I fundamentally agree with everything you just said, right? And that's my view on it. And other people can take a different view. There are the lone voices in the amateurism wilderness out there. They're fewer and fewer sort of by the year. But, you know, I think what's interesting is that I wonder if Zion Williamson necessarily sees it that way, right? By all accounts, he like really wanted to come play at Duke for a year and try and win a national title, and was cool with what that meant for the, you know, sort of the larger socioeconomic picture of college basketball. Like, so, you know, it's, I agree with you, and I think it's a major problem just that people have woken up to, and that this discussion exists in a way it didn't even, you know, think about when Kenyon Martin got hurt, how many people were talking about amateurism and college sports and what the NBA age limit should be. It's just a totally different conversation now, and that conversation is absolutely justified and should be happening. But I do sometimes wonder, particularly a guy like Zion, but there are plenty of other players too who just, everybody feels differently about it. And some guys will feel the way you described, Dan, like, what are we doing here? Why are we risking this? I'm about to go make $10 million a year, and one slip and one busted shoe could ruin all of that for me. There are probably guys who think that, and there are, I think, probably guys who think, no, I mean, I want to be doing this. No one forced me to. So it's complicated. It's more complicated even than all of the large-scale complicated issues, the NBA age limit and the way college sports are structured, and the injustices therein. It's also located on an individual and personal level, too.
Talking college hoops with Eamon Brennan of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter, at Eamon Brennan. This is Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score. Do you feel as though within players and their circles, collegiate players in their circles, that this conversation has been dampened some because the NBA seems ready to do away with the one-and-done rule sooner rather than later?
Maybe. I mean, again, everybody's different, and I think college kids especially, as we all know, have differing levels of sort of interest in just this sort of stuff. And some guys are just like, no, like, you know, I don't care. And some guys will, you know, describe their collegiate experience, whether it's 4 years or 8 months, as like extremely valuable and something they cherish. And I think there's probably a group of players out there who are not particularly thrilled with the idea of having to go play for free for a year, but, you know, also don't want to go play in the G League because it's not really been an established option yet. The sort of early adopters of the idea of, oh yeah, just go play in a different country for a few years, that sort of trend never really took off in a meaningful way. And so, you know, I think that there is probably plenty of discussions happening with that among kids. And I'm sure that, you know, the guys who actually have the most money on the line are probably aware of it, probably more so at the high school level, because those kids will be looking at it and will say, you know, by the time I am a potential NBA draft pick, will this rule be gone? And what does that mean for me? You know, are all of these college coaches calling me and the commitments I may give, are those going to be meaningless if I decide that, you know, and I'm able to go to the NBA in a couple of years? So it may be happening more at that level with prospects and their families and, you know, sort of the groups of people around them. But I'm sure it's happening, and it's going to be a fundamental change in the way college basketball looks and feels and operates, the way the original rule was, you know, in 2007. And it's going to be fascinating to see sort of the trickle-down effects from there.
A couple of years ago, the Northwestern Wildcats had this city captivated, making their first ever run to the NCAA tournament and getting a win, and then giving Gonzaga a run for their money with a disputed call for goaltending and all that. And here this was, the precipice of a new era of competitiveness. You know, there's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and there's all the celebrity power and all that. And they suck. Like, they are terrible. Why? Why are they so bad?
Well, I would say it's a couple of things. They're just not, you know, they're not a great team this year. They're not a tournament quality team this year. Offensively, they're really bad. I mean, they're the worst offensive team in the Big Ten on a per possession basis, and it's really ugly, you know, because it probably was never going to be high flying and pretty for Northwestern anyway. But when you miss a bunch of shots and you're really inefficient in that sort of style of play, it's bad. But I think the thing this year with the Big Ten is that teams that, you know, conventionally in most years would seem okay and their records would seem much better, look really bad. Penn State is one of those teams. You know, like, you know, it was kind of a joke the other night after they walloped Nebraska that Penn State might be the best 3-12, you know, sort of Big Ten team of all time. And the thing is, it's not crazy because Penn State is like, if you, you know, if you look at adjusted efficiency ranks and sort of, you know, advanced metrics ranks and just wipe their record out of there and just look at sort of how they play per possession, they're, you know, in the 60s, 70s in the country, which usually is right around in the middle of the Big Ten. And last year, for example, when the Big Ten was down, that, you know, a team like Nebraska would have loved to have had a few more of those teams last year that were semi-quality wins that they could go get when they were really trying to get into the Big Ten and won 13 games in the league, and, or excuse me, into the NCAA tournament, rather, and won 13 games in the Big Ten and couldn't get into the tournament. So Northwestern is obviously, you know, it's really struggling on the offensive end this year, but the Big Ten, just from top to bottom, the bottom of the league is a lot better than it usually is, and the top's really good. And so every night you can lose, and we're seeing that with teams like Penn State, like Northwestern, like Indiana, like Nebraska, all of whom rate out pretty well metrically, but just, you know, keep losing game after game. I think the league is just kind of a brutal place to be this year.
Eamon, last year my Instagram feed was filled with highlights from Zion Williamson and Mac McClung. So I'm looking around for like an appetizer to Duke UNC last night, and sure enough, I settle on Nova and Georgetown, and got, there he is, Mac McClung. I remember watching his first game of the year and hadn't checked in a whole ton on Georgetown or anything. So I slapped my $5 down on Nova and summarily gave that away because they just gave up against Georgetown. How is that team put together right now, and what do you make of Mac McClung's freshman year?
Yeah, no, Georgetown's an interesting one because last year was sort of a feel-good, hey, we're not really good, but we play hard. And the fans were on board, and they had gotten so, you know, from everyone I've talked to and sort of that fan base, like they'd gotten so worn down by the latter stage of John Thompson III's tenure and sort of the same basketball over and over, and the style of play was boring, that anything would have been good. And Ewing's personality and the fact that he's running modern NBA-style sets and not the Princeton offense was just enough for everyone to be sort of pleased. And this year was kind of like the same tenor, I thought, coming into the year. It was, hey, we've got a decent recruiting class. Let's see how we go. Jesse Govan, their center, is back. And I think, once again, Ewing sort of exceeded everyone's expectations. They are, you know, not a tournament team at this point, but, you know, the players that they have, I think, Mac McClung, interestingly enough, was like a, you know, the reason why you saw so many highlights of him, he was like a minor internet celebrity for his dunks and highlights and mixtape stuff, but was also kind of, you know, he was like a three-star recruit. He wasn't a high-end recruit, but he's been better sort of floor game-wise, and I think anyone has expected he's really improved as the season's come along. The main, you know, sort of central recruit in this incoming class, point guard James Akinjo, has been really good and looks like he's going to be the kind of four-year point guard who probably isn't going to have a ton of NBA looks, but by the time he's a junior and senior, he's just going to be really, really solid at the college level. And then Govan is a guy who for 3 years was a conventional center in sort of the classic Georgetown mold. And, you know, his second year under Ewing here, after going to the draft last year, getting some feedback, coming back for his senior season, is now a guy shooting an extremely respectable mark from the three-point line at his size and, you know, previous skill level. It's kind of remarkable, and it gives them what used to be a very slow, very predictable, hand the ball off, spin around, cut, you know, make a back cut, Princeton offense stuff, has become kind of a young, interesting, flawed, but fun modern team that, you know, is, given how bad the NCAA tournament bubble is this year and given the win they just got last night, is like not super far away from maybe getting into the NCAA tournament. And I think that would be a remarkable accomplishment given where this team and even these players were earlier in the year and given what Ewing's done in his 2 years since he took the job.
Real quick, what would stop, outside of just saying Zion Williamson, what would stop this Gonzaga team from being the one that breaks through and wins a title?
Nothing. I don't think that. I mean, they're really, really good. And, you know, everyone has concerns about Gonzaga every year. I think they kind of killed that when they got to the title game, but they're always, at least they have been for a very long time, sort of the whipping boy of, oh, you're just not that good. You play a bunch of small teams, and then you go to the tournament and lose. And I think Virginia has kind of taken over that mantle of you have to prove it in the tournament. Gonzaga at this point is just, they're a national powerhouse, and their conference has nothing to do with that. They are a program on the level of any high major team in the country, and they're good enough. They are good enough in every facet on both sides of the ball to absolutely compete for the national title this year. There isn't one thing you could point to, I think, that would necessarily keep them from doing so.
Eamon, thanks a lot for your time, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.